Mondays at this time, we get our house call from the Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital, Dr. Kevin Most. Doctor, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, Bob. How about yourself?
Well, you know, after being off for a week, I feel like I'm going from zero to 100 here instantly, but I'm doing my best. Lots to get to regarding the pandemic. The FDA has granted emergency authorization for a saliva test. This is what the NBA has been doing. And how accurate is this test, Doc?
Yeah, Bob, this is pretty cool. So, you know, usually when we talk about studies, I'm going to tell you that they were supplied or they were funded by the NIH or they were funded by the Gates Foundation. It's kind of interesting when you're talking about COVID and find out that this study and the technology was funded by the NBA Players Association. But this is a saliva test. So a couple things about it. One, it takes away the chance that the collection of the specimen was not good. In other words, you know, we know the nasopharyngeal, you have to really do it right in order for it to be accurate. So they've tested it against that, and it has lined up very well as far as its sensitivity and specificity. Probably the thing that's most interesting about it is they've gotten the cost of this test, their direct cost, down to $4. Hmm. So if you think about, okay, well, you're going to have some other cost collection in that, this will be a $10 test, not a couple hundred dollar test. And you have a turnaround time of a couple hours. So we have these tests we're waiting 10, 14, 15 days for. Now we're talking about this being able to be done in three. Yale, not looking to cash in on it. The NBA, not looking to cash in on it. They made this an open source, which essentially means that Yale is willing to share the cookbook, share the recipe for anyone else in the world who wants to make this test at no cost to them. So you could see this blow up here over the next couple of weeks as people will ask for that open source, they'll ask for the information and develop the test now in many hospitals and universities around the world.
So how long do you think it would take for this to be available widely?
Weeks. I mean, I think you're going to find Yale has done it. They're going to give you, here's everything you do, here's how you do it, and they're doing it for the good of society, not for making money. And if you read the articles on it and read what they say, they think that in a matter of a couple of weeks, any major university should be able to have this up and running.
Well, that's great news. So it's inexpensive, and you can get the results fast. And what do we know about the accuracy?
Accuracy is very good for both the sensitivity and specificity. In other words, it's not going to say you're positive when you're not, and it's going to capture those tests when they are positive. And the big thing is this is a self-collection, right? It's a saliva test. So it's not like we need to have special swabs. So we also cut down the cost or the chance that we're going to run out of swabs because this is, you know, you're spitting into a plastic container. Mm. So it's really all very promising news. And when it came out on Saturday, I could tell you there were a lot of us that were very happy.
Yeah, that is good news. What do we know about this American Heart Association report that came out the other day about the coronavirus and heart damage related to it?
Yeah, so you know, it's interesting, and we're finding out more of this as we're starting to see younger people being affected as well, which is a little bit concerning. We always knew that heart disease was one of the risk factors. What we didn't realize, or that we're now realizing more, is that the virus actually attacks the heart quite a bit. So it causes a condition called myocarditis, where it causes inflammation and it attacks the portion of the heart that, you know, the muscle, the part that acts as a pump. So we're finding it like more in younger people now. You probably heard about it, that they found it in some college athletes and that they have found it in younger people. Mm-hmm. We knew we had concerns with older people who already had heart disease, but now, in fact, it looks like this is a virus that will affect healthy people in their hearts.
Well, that's a little scary. And if somebody's asymptomatic, is the belief still that those folks probably will not have any long-term ill effects from the virus?
Yep. Yeah, that's still the assumption. Mainly because the virus is just kind of hanging out in the back of their throat, really doesn't get to anywhere else in their body, doesn't get into the lungs and cause damage where you'd also get symptoms. so it doesn't look like it's getting into the heart. It's just kind of living in the back of your throat. So you've probably heard of people who said, oh, I was a strep carrier. In other words, I had strep in the back of my throat, but I didn't have symptoms. That's the asymptomatic people. They're almost COVID carriers, which is the reason we're all asking everyone to wear masks, because we can't identify them.
What are you hearing from your colleagues around the state about how we're doing? The first region in Illinois to experience a rollback is the Metro East region. They've surpassed an 8% positivity rate for three straight days now. What do we know about Chicago and the suburbs, Doc?
Yes. Chicago and the suburbs are doing good. We ticked up a little bit, went up 0.1% for the whole state. So if you look in the suburbs, DuPage County is doing okay. Will, Kendall, Kane are creeping up a little bit, but really our hot spots are still going to be down in Springfield and down more towards St. Louis, and then also towards the southeast portion of the state, where some of those counties are approaching 10%. So overall, the state just went up 0.1%, so just a little bit over 4%. But really, the impact seems to be more in the southern part of the state now, which lagged behind Chicago, obviously, from our hot spot.
And we're in the middle of our Monday morning house call with the chief medical officer at Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital, Dr. Kevin Most. Dr. Most, we've all been hearing a lot about masks and which masks are most effective. What's the word on this now as far as the type of mask we should be wearing?
Yeah, but really, the interesting thing is the blow-up of how many masks are being made now and where they're being made and how they're being made. So really, if you want to make sure that you're wearing the right one, you know, it is just a simple step-off. So N95 masks, those are the masks that we wear in the health professional area to protect ourselves from somebody with COVID. So those are probably the best masks. Those fit very tightly to your face. There's no air that leaks around them. So those are the best. The second ones are the ones that you're going to see if you walk into the hospital, and those mainly walking around or those taking care of other patients. That's the three-layer surgical mask. Those are the next best. After that point, those are the two, and the three-layer surgical mask you can get now commercially. You can get them out there. Then you have the propylene mask. They're okay. The ones that we want to kind of ask people to stay away from are the bandanas, for one thing, and then the very thin, what we'll call a gaiter. A gaiter goes completely around your neck and kind of gets pulled up. If it's a three-layer gaiter, it's okay, but a lot of gaiters are a single layer, and they really don't do much. The other one that everyone really appears to like now is the N95 that they can get with the exhalation valve. They get that because you can buy them at most of the hardware stores because they're being used by painters. They're being used by people working in dusty environments. And what that valve does, it allows anything coming out of your mouth to be expelled out, but doesn't take anything in. So the reason we're wearing masks is mainly to protect others from ourselves. So that mask defeats that purpose completely. Somebody with COVID wearing that mask around will continue to spread COVID, and they'll only protect themselves, which doesn't make any sense, as they already have the illness. So that's the one mask that I would say stay away from. It might be easier to breathe, but it really serves no function.
Good to know. Among the questions from listeners, people wondering if it's too early to get a flu shot.
No, it's really not. You know, this is going to be a big year. You're going to see a lot of us telling you the importance of flu shots this year for a couple reasons. One is we want to minimize influenza. We always want to, but yet we still only have a percentage rate of about 45% of individuals who will get the flu shot. But this year it's going to be really important, because if you come into the emergency room or the doctor's office with chills, fever, body aches, now I have to decide, do you have influenza or do you have COVID? Now I'm going to be running an influenza test on you and a COVID test. We will run out of tests if people do not have that. We need to make sure that we continue to have the COVID tests available. Also, the ability to spread this illness with the confusion that we have. You're going to have kids coming out of school because we don't know whether it's COVID or influenza. So, no, I would say, you know, my big thing is normally between September 1st and October 1st. So this year, anytime in the next, 4 weeks, I think would be good. We want to have a very minimal influenza season. And we've proven already by the actions this spring that we've decreased the spread of influenza just by the simple things we're doing already.
Yes, let's hope we continue to be safe and healthy. And finally, there was a University of Southern California study that was just released. I don't know if you had a chance to go through it, Doc. It was about the symptoms of the coronavirus and what people probably will experience first. And I think this study found that fever happens first. Have you had time to look at this study?
Yeah, absolutely. And the interesting thing about it, Bob, is it helps the medical field. If we know an illness and we say, okay, this is what we expect the transition of this illness to be. You're going to start with this, then we're going to see this, then we're going to see this. Those are great because it actually helps us with the timing of medication and tells us, oh, you know what, you're too far along that we can't give you this medicine. Even with influenza, we know once you get that illness, if you wait 2 days before you come into the doctor's office with true influenza, it's too late for us to give you Tamiflu. So yes, what the Southern Cal study showed was that fever is going to be your first symptom, cough is going to be your next, muscle pain, followed by shortness of breath, which actually, as you think about it, makes a lot of sense. Fever, we end up getting a little dehydrated. Cough is certainly going to cause inflammation. Then we're going to get muscle pain. Then we're going to get shortness of breath. The importance of it is, when can we use medications? Boy, if you're at the point where already you have muscle pain, are we going to say, boy, remdesivir is not going to work well for you now? We know that historically. Or you are at the perfect sweet spot for dexamethasone treatment for this. So really important that we start to catalog the timing of these illnesses along with the effectiveness of treatments at different times. So we're learning more and more every day about this, and we'll continue to.
So I was thinking, what's the use in taking your temperature? Because in many cases, people did not have a high fever. But actually, according to this study, it's beneficial to keep taking your temperature because in many cases, that's the first thing that you'll notice if you get the virus, correct?
Correct. See, the problem is, like we've talked before, so many people are asymptomatic or not going to have symptoms. But those that are symptomatic are the ones that we're actually concerned about as far as their continued health. The asymptomatic people, we're concerned about them spreading. The people who have symptoms, we're concerned, we want to do everything we can to keep you off that ventilator. So really, taking your temperature, monitoring your temperature, monitoring symptoms is all still extremely important. And that's why you see it happening, almost every place you go now. People say, should I be taking my temperature at home every day? It's not a bad idea. And if it decreases your anxiety, certainly. But really, you're going to start to notice some of the symptoms if you've been exposed.
Dr. Kevin Most, thanks as always. We look forward to the house call next Monday morning. Do I have my honorary medical degree yet, doctor?
You're getting close. You still have to do your internship and residency, but you're getting close.
Thanks. I'll work on it. Have a good day.